This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present No More Mr. Nice Guy, A Proven Plan for Getting What You Want in Love, Sex, and Life by Dr. Robert A. Glover. Narrated by the author.
Dedication and Appreciation. No More Mr. Nice Guy is dedicated to all the men who have so openly and courageously shared their lives and stories with me. This book is about them and for them. Thank you. I also want to express appreciation to all the people who supported me in writing No More Mr. Nice Guy. All the men in my groups and seminars, all the people who read early drafts and gave valuable feedback, everyone who asked, "Have you finished your book yet?" A special thank you to Elizabeth Oreskovich, Dr. Ann Hastings, Debbie Duvall, Nat Sobel, Laura Nolan, and Jennifer Casis. This book would not exist without your unique contributions. Although you may find the information, principles, applications, and assignments in this book to be useful, they are presented with the understanding that neither the author nor the publisher is engaged in presenting specific medical, psychological, emotional, or sexual advice. Nor is anything in this book intended to be a diagnosis, prescription, recommendation, or cure for any specific kind of medical, psychological, emotional, or sexual problem. Each person has unique needs, and this book cannot take these individual differences into account. Each person should engage in a program of treatment, prevention, cure, or general health only in consultation with a licensed, qualified physician, therapist, or other competent professional. New preface from the author. I didn't set out to write a book. I'd begun therapy to work on issues in my marriage. I couldn't figure out why being such a nice guy didn't make my wife happy or make her want to have more sex with me. No matter how hard I tried to please her, keep the peace, avoid conflict, and hide my needs, she was still frequently moody, angry, critical, and sexually unavailable. My number one goal of therapy was to find out why being a nice guy didn't make my wife treat me better. Thankfully, my early recovery process took me in the healthier direction of learning how to be honest and transparent, set boundaries, live with integrity, love myself, make my needs a priority, express my wants, embrace my passion, and connect with men. Along the way, I began to notice that a number of the men who came to me for therapy were saying many of the same things I had thought or said. Why is she angry all the time? It's never enough. All I want is to be appreciated. Why doesn't she want to have sex anymore? When is it going to be my turn? I thought, I can finish these guys' sentences for them. They are just like me. I'm not the only guy who thinks that being nice should make people love him, like him, and treat him well. So I started a bi-monthly No More Mr. Nice Guy group for a handful of my clients. Every other week, I would write a lesson for these men that detailed what I was learning from my exploration of my own nice guy issues. I kept writing, and over time, the guys, and often their wives and girlfriends, began to tell me, "You should write a book. You should go on Oprah." Well, I never made it onto Oprah, but I did end up writing a book. It took me around 6 years to write No More Mr. Nice Guy. I was not only learning about the nice guy syndrome, but also doing my own work and learning how to write all at the same time. It took another 3 years to find an agent and secure a publisher. Countless publishing companies turned down No More Mr. Nice Guy, all for the same reason. Their marketing department said men wouldn't buy a self-help book, especially a book that told them they were losers. They all missed the point. The men I wrote about were not only not losers, they were highly motivated to become the best men they could be. Thus, they bought books. Fortunately, Nat Sobel, an experienced New York literary agent, believed in No More Mr. Nice Guy. He found the book a publisher, Barnes & Noble, which was launching an e-book publishing venture. Thanks to a lot of hustle and some very good luck, funny how the harder I work, the luckier I get, the media picked up on the whole nice guy thing and I enjoyed my 15 minutes of fame. Barnes & Noble also noticed and partnered with Running Press to publish a print edition of the book in 2003. Now, almost 15 years later, sales of No More Mr. Nice Guy continues to increase every year. The book has been translated into over a dozen languages. So much for men not buying self-help books. This reprint offers a good opportunity to share a brief progress report about my personal and professional journey over the 15 years since the original print edition of No More Mr. Nice Guy came out. I've said many times, No More Mr. Nice Guy is autobiographical. I just use other guys' stories to tell my own. I've also frequently said, this book is not a collection of my successes. It is a chronicle of my mistakes. I didn't write No More Mr. Nice Guy as some academic sitting in my study researching the topic of nice guys. This book is about my life and the lives of countless nice guys with whom I've worked over a significant part of my career. I was a poster child nice guy and am now a recovering nice guy. I will be until the day I die. At times, like most nice guys, I'm a slow learner and a quick forgetter. Men seem attracted to No More Mr. Nice Guy because it is authentic and honest. I've received thousands of emails from men over the years asking me how I could know them so well. They tell me how the book has changed their lives and given them direction and hope. It feels good to know that telling the story of my struggles and what I've learned from them has helped so many men and women around the world. When I finished writing No More Mr. Nice Guy, I had a strong suspicion that I wasn't done with my own journey of discovery and recovery, but I didn't know how right that premonition was. I was married to my second wife, Elizabeth, when I started working on my nice guy issues and when I wrote the book. She was the big stick upside the head that wouldn't let me wiggle out of addressing my dysfunctional nice guy tendencies. I had to go all in and find a different roadmap for life. Being a nice guy just wasn't getting it done. I will be forever grateful for the force of nature that was Elizabeth in getting me started on my journey. But even as I finished writing No More Mr. Nice Guy, I knew I wouldn't always need that constant whack upside the head to keep me moving forward. Elizabeth and I separated about 6 months before the print edition of No More Mr. Nice Guy came out. I had no way of knowing it at the time, but my life was about to head down a very different road with unseen adventures and a multitude of new growth experiences. I'll keep the story of my last 15 years short. I went on my book tour, got divorced, had to learn to live alone for the first time in my adult life, struggled with some depression, frequently felt lost, learned to date in my late 40s, met a lot of great women, had a lot of sex, and couldn't figure out on what planet I had landed after a 14-year marriage with virtually no sex. Traveled, promoted my book, moved and rebuilt my counseling practice, learned to salsa, worked with thousands more nice guys in groups, seminars, online courses, and consultations, started an online university, became a dating coach for men, about which, if you had asked me when I was writing No More Mr. Nice Guy, whether I would ever teach men to date, I would have answered, no way in hell. Reinvented my business so I could live in Mexico or anywhere. Built a new website. Recorded hundreds of podcasts on every aspect of nice guy syndrome recovery. Had some great relationships. Made some more mistakes. Bought a home in Mexico. Got married again. Became a parent again. Am getting better at speaking Spanish. Having discovered that marrying a woman who doesn't speak English will do that. Signed a contract with Warner Brothers for a television show based on No More Mr. Nice Guy, in development as I write this. Am working on two more books, and am currently transforming my personal and professional life into being a full-time writer and speaker. Phew. Personally, I couldn't have predicted 15 years ago that I would be sitting where I am today. Throughout the years since, my ongoing mantra has been, I love waking up in the morning not knowing how my day is going to end. I have discovered that when people let go of the inaccurate roadmaps they developed in childhood and begin searching for more helpful life paradigms, they open the door for an amazing adventure. I also have continued to learn more about myself and about Nice Guys. If I were to add a new chapter to No More Mr. Nice Guy, it would be about the effect of anxiety on nice guys. In the book, I stress the influence of toxic shame, but now see that the nice guy syndrome is probably as much about managing anxiety as about managing shame. Learning to self-soothe is every bit as important as learning to release toxic shame. I say in the book, don't try to do this alone, and still believe this as much as ever. This advice will never change. We need the help of safe people to do our work of recovering from the nice guy syndrome. Fortunately, today the internet, a plethora of books, websites, blogs, forums, programs, retreats, mastermind groups, and coaches focus on helping men do this work. And I'm humbled and gratified to hear how many of these resources recommend my book. When I began my recovery process, about all I had to guide me were 12-step groups and the mythopoetic men's movement led by people like Robert Bly and Michael Mead. Ho! Perhaps you are just beginning your adventure by picking up this edition of No More Mr. Nice Guy. Perhaps you have already begun your journey through 12-step recovery, therapy, or coaching, and you've been recommended this book. Perhaps you've lent your copy of the original edition to a friend, or it is so filled with yellow highlighter that you've decided to pick up the new copy. Wherever you are on your journey, thank you for joining me now. We're going to have a good time. When I reread my own book in preparation for this new printing, something I had written in the first chapter grabbed my attention. Being integrated means being able to accept all aspects of oneself. An integrated man is able to embrace everything that makes him unique: his power, his assertiveness, his courage, and his passion, as well as his imperfections, his mistakes, and his dark side. One thing that has become clearer to me since I finished writing No More Mr. Nice Guy almost 20 years ago is this. Recovery from the Nice Guy Syndrome is not about becoming a better man or getting rid of anything. Nice guys have been trying to do both since childhood. Recovery is about becoming more you. You don't have to become a better you to be liked, to be loved, get your needs met, or have a good life. You just have to be you. It is actually all the things that you've tried to become or tried to eliminate or hide about you that have gotten in your way all of these years. My profound wish is that this book will help you rediscover, accept, embrace, love, and be you. I don't know where my life will take me over the next 15 years. I like that. Perhaps I'll be writing another preface for another edition of No More Mr. Nice Guy, and I hope I'll have more changes and discoveries and adventures to write about. More importantly, I hope this book opens the door for a lifetime of discoveries and adventures as you move in the direction of becoming more you. Have an adventure. Be you. Robert Glover, July 2017, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Introduction. 5 decades of dramatic social change and monumental shifts in the traditional family have created a breed of men who have been conditioned to seek the approval of others. These men are called nice guys. Nice guys are concerned about looking good and doing it right. They are happiest when they are making others happy. Nice guys avoid conflict like the plague and will go to great lengths to avoid upsetting anyone. In general, nice guys are peaceful and generous. Nice guys are especially concerned about pleasing women and about being different from other men. In a nutshell, nice guys believe that if they are good, giving, and caring, they will in return be happy, loved, and fulfilled. Sound too good to be true? It is. Over the last several years, I've encountered countless frustrated and resentful nice guys in my practice as a psychotherapist. These men struggle in vain to experience the happiness they so desperately crave and believe they deserve. This frustration is due to the fact that nice guys have believed a myth. This myth is the essence of the nice guy syndrome. The nice guy syndrome represents a belief that if nice guys are good, they will be loved, get their needs met, and live a problem-free life. When this strategy fails to produce the desired results, as it often does, nice guys usually just try harder, doing more of the same. Due to the sense of helplessness and resentment this pattern inevitably produces, nice guys are often anything but nice. My exploration of the nice guy syndrome grew out of my own frustration of trying to do it right, yet never getting back what I believed I deserved. I was the typical sensitive New Age guy, and proud of it. I believed I was one of the nicest guys you would ever meet, yet I wasn't happy. As I began exploring my own nice guy behaviors, caretaking, giving to get, fixing, keeping the peace, avoiding conflict, seeking approval, hiding mistakes, I started noticing numerous men with similar traits in my counseling practice. It dawned on me that the script guiding my own life was not an isolated incident, but the product of a social dynamic that affected countless adult males. Up until now, very few professionals have taken the problem of the nice guy syndrome seriously or offered an effective, comprehensive solution. The earliest reference I have found by a mental health professional to the nice guy syndrome is in a tape recorded in 1985 by Neil Scott, LMSW-ACP. The tape is entitled, "The Nice Guy and Why He Always Fails with Women." See suggested resources for recovering nice guys at the end of the book. Most other references to nice guys or the nice guy syndrome address the issue in a humorous manner or from the place of nice guys being helpless victims. This is why I wrote No More Mr. Nice Guy. This book shows nice guys how to stop seeking approval and start getting what they want in love, sex, and life. The information presented in No More Mr. Nice Guy represents a proven plan to help men break free from the ineffective patterns of the nice guy syndrome. It is based on my own experience of recovery and my work with countless nice guys over the last 20 years. No More Mr. Nice Guy is unashamedly pro-male. Nevertheless, countless women have supported the writing of this book. Women who read the book regularly tell me that it not only helps them better understand their nice guy partner, it also helps them gain new insights about themselves. The information and tools presented in No More Mr. Nice Guy work. If you are a frustrated nice guy, the principles presented in the following pages will change your life. You will learn effective ways to get your needs met, begin to feel more powerful and confident, create the kind of intimate relationships you really want, learn to express your feelings and emotions, have a fulfilling and exciting sex life, embrace your masculinity and build meaningful relationships with men, live up to your potential and become truly creative and productive. Accept yourself just as you are. If the above traits sound good to you, your journey of breaking free from the nice guy syndrome has just begun. It is time to stop seeking approval and start getting what you want in love, sex, and life. Chapter 1. The Nice Guy Syndrome. I'm a nice guy. I'm one of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. Jason, a chiropractor in his mid-30s, began his first session of individual therapy with this introduction. Jason described his life as perfect, except for one major problem, his sex life. It had been several months since he and his wife Heather had been sexual, and it didn't look like anything was going to change soon. Jason spoke openly about his marriage, his family, and his sexuality. An affable man, he seemed to welcome the opportunity to talk about himself and his life. More than anything, Jason wanted to be liked. He saw himself as a very generous, giving person. He prided himself on not having many ups and downs and for never losing his temper. He revealed that he liked to make people happy and that he hated conflict. To avoid rocking the boat with his wife, He tended to hold back his feelings and tried to do everything right. After this introduction, Jason took a piece of paper out of his pocket and began to unfold it. While doing so, he stated that he had written a few things down so he wouldn't forget them. "I can never do it right," Jason began, looking over his list. "No matter how hard I try, Heather always finds something wrong. I don't deserve to be treated this way. I try to be a good husband and father, but it's never good enough." Jason paused as he looked over his list. "This morning is a good example," he continued. "While Heather was getting ready for work, I got our baby Chelsea up, fed her breakfast, and gave her a bath. I had her all ready to go and was about to get ready myself. Then Heather walked in and got that look on her face. I knew I was in trouble. 'Why'd you dress her in that? That's a good outfit.'" Jason mimicked his wife's tone. "I didn't know she wanted Chelsea to wear something different. After everything I did to get her ready this morning, it was still wrong." "Here's another example," Jason continued. "The other day, I cleaned the kitchen and did a real good job. I loaded the dishwasher, did the pots and pans, and swept the floor. I thought Heather would really appreciate all that I was doing to help out. Before I was finished, she walked in and asked, 'How come you didn't wipe off the counters?' I wasn't even done, for goodness sake, but instead of noticing all that I had done and thanking me, she focused on the one thing I hadn't finished yet." "Then there is the sex thing," Jason said. "We only messed around a few times before we got married because we're both Christians. Sex is real important to me, but Heather just isn't interested. I thought once you got married, everything was supposed to be great. After all I do for Heather, you'd think she'd be willing to give me the one thing I really want. It seems like I'm always giving so much more than I get." Now, looking like a little boy on the couch, Jason pleaded, "All I want is to be loved and appreciated. Is that too much to ask?" Some of the nicest guys you will ever meet. Men like Jason walk into my office on a surprisingly regular basis. These guys come in all shapes and sizes, yet they all have the same basic worldview. Let me introduce you to a few more. Omar. Omar's number one goal in life is to please his girlfriend. Nevertheless, she complains that he is never emotionally available for her. In fact, every one of his previous girlfriends has had the same complaint. Since Omar sees himself as such a giver, he can't understand these accusations. Omar states that his greatest joy in life is making other people happy. He even carries a pager so his friends can get in touch with him if they need anything. Todd. Todd prides himself on treating women with honesty and respect. He believes these traits set him apart from other men and should attract women to him. Though he has many female friends, he rarely dates. The women he knows tell him what a great listener he is and often call him to share their problems. He likes feeling needed. These female friends constantly tell him what a great catch he will make for some lucky woman. In spite of the way he treats women, he can't understand why they all seem to be attracted to jerks rather than to nice guys like him. Bill. Bill is the person to whom everyone turns when they need something. The word no just isn't in his vocabulary. He fixes cars for women at his church. He coaches his son's Little League baseball team. His buddies call on him when they need help moving. He looks after his widowed mother every evening after work. Even though it makes him feel good to give to others, he never seems to get as much as he gives. Gary. Gary's wife has frequent rage attacks in which she verbally shames and demeans him. Because he is afraid of conflict and doesn't want to rock the boat, Gary will avoid bringing up subjects that he knows might make his wife angry. After a fight, he is always the first one to apologize. He cannot recall his wife ever saying she was sorry for any of her behaviors. In spite of the constant conflict, Gary says he loves his wife and would do anything to please her. Rick, a gay man in his early 40s, is in a committed relationship with an alcoholic. Rick came to counseling to help his partner, Jay, with his drinking problem. Rick complains that it always feels as if it is up to him to hold everything together. His hope is that if he can help Jay get sober, he will finally have the kind of relationship he has always wanted. Lyle, a devout Christian, tries to do everything right. He teaches Sunday school and is an elder in his church. Nevertheless, he has struggled since adolescence with an addiction to pornography. Lyle masturbates compulsively, often 3 to 4 times a day. He spends hours every day looking at sexually explicit websites on the internet. He is terrified that if anyone ever finds out the truth about his sexual compulsions, his life will be destroyed. He tries to control his problem with prayer and Bible study, although neither of these approaches has done much good. Jose, a business consultant in his late 30s, has spent the last 5 years in a relationship with a woman he considers needy and dependent. Jose began thinking about breaking up the day she first moved in. He is afraid that his girlfriend wouldn't be able to make it on her own if he left her. Although he has made several aborted attempts to break up, his girlfriend always becomes such an emotional basket case that he gets back together with her. Jose spends just about every waking moment trying to figure out how to get out of the relationship without hurting his girlfriend or looking like a jerk. Who are these men? Though all of these men are unique, each shares a common life script. They all believe that if they are good and do everything right, they will be loved, get their needs met, and have a problem-free life. This attempt to be good typically involves trying to eliminate or hide certain things about themselves, their mistakes, needs, emotions, and become what they believe others want them to be, generous, helpful, peaceful, etc. I call these men nice guys. Up to now, we haven't paid much attention to the nice guy, but he is everywhere. He is the relative who lets his wife run the show. He is the buddy who will do anything for anybody, but whose own life seems to be in shambles. He is the guy who frustrates his wife or girlfriend because he is so afraid of conflict that nothing ever gets resolved. He is the boss who tells one person what they want to hear, then reverses himself to please someone else. He is the man who lets people walk all over him because he doesn't want to rock the boat. He is the dependable guy at church or the club who will never say no and would never tell anyone if they were imposing on him. He is the man whose life seems so under control until, boom, one day he does something to destroy it all. Characteristics of nice guys. Every nice guy is unique, but all have a cluster of similar characteristics. These traits are the result of a script, often formed in childhood, that guides their lives. While other men may have one or two of these traits, nice guys seem to possess a significant number. Nice guys are givers. Nice guys frequently state that it makes them feel good to give to others. These men believe their generosity is a sign of how good they are and will make other people love and appreciate them. Nice guys fix and caretake. If a person has a problem, has a need, is angry, depressed, or sad, nice guys will frequently attempt to solve or fix the situation, usually without being asked. Nice guys seek approval from others. A universal trait of the nice guy syndrome is the seeking of validation from others. Everything a nice guy does or says is at some level calculated to gain someone's approval or avoid disapproval. This is especially true in their relationships with women. Nice guys avoid conflict. Nice guys seek to keep their world smooth. To do this, they avoid doing things that might rock the boat or upset anyone. Nice guys believe they must hide their perceived flaws and mistakes. These men are afraid that others will get mad at them, shame them, or leave them if some mistake or shortcoming is exposed. Nice guys seek the right way to do things. Nice guys believe there is a key to having a happy, problem-free life. They are convinced that if they can only figure out the right way to do everything, nothing should ever go wrong. Nice guys repress their feelings. Nice guys tend to analyze rather than feel. They may see feelings as a waste of time and energy. They frequently try to keep their feelings on an even keel. Nice guys often try to be different from their fathers. Many nice guys report having unavailable, absent, passive, angry, philandering, or alcoholic fathers. It is not unusual for these men to make a decision at some point in their lives to try to be 180 degrees different from dad. Nice guys are often more comfortable relating to women than to men. Due to their childhood conditioning, many nice guys have few male friends. Nice guys frequently seek the approval of women and convince themselves they are different from other men. They like to believe they are not selfish, angry, or abusive, traits they link to other men. Nice guys have difficulty making their needs a priority. These men often feel that it is selfish to put their needs first. They believe it is a virtue to put the needs of others ahead of their own. Nice guys often make their partner their emotional center. Many nice guys report that they are only happy if their partner is happy. Therefore, they will often focus tremendous energy on their intimate relationships. What's wrong with being a nice guy? We might be tempted to minimize the problem of the nice guy syndrome. After all, how can being nice be such a bad thing? We might even chuckle at the Marvin milquetoast behaviors of these men as portrayed in comic strips and television sitcoms. Since men already represent an easy target in our culture, the caricature of a sensitive guy might be an object of amusement rather than concern. Nice guys themselves frequently have a difficult time grasping the depth and seriousness of their beliefs and behaviors. When I begin working with these men, almost without exception, they will ask, "What is wrong with being a nice guy?" Having picked up this book and puzzled over the title, you might be wondering the same thing. By giving these men the label nice guy, I'm not so much referring to their actual behaviors, but to their core belief system about themselves and the world around them. These men have been conditioned to believe that if they are nice, they will be loved, get their needs met, and have a smooth life. The term nice guy is actually a misnomer, because nice guys are often anything but nice. Here are some not-so-nice traits of nice guys. Nice guys are dishonest. These men hide their mistakes, avoid conflict, say what they think people want to hear, and repress their feelings. These traits make nice guys fundamentally dishonest. Nice guys are secretive. Because they are so driven to seek approval, nice guys will hide anything that they believe might upset anyone. The nice guy motto is, "If at first you don't succeed, hide the evidence." Nice guys are compartmentalized. Nice guys are adept at harmonizing contradictory pieces of information about themselves by separating them into individual compartments in their minds. Therefore, a married man can create his own definition of fidelity, which allows him to deny that he had an affair with his secretary, or intern, because he never put his penis in her vagina. Nice guys are manipulative. Nice guys tend to have a hard time making their needs a priority and have difficulty asking for what they want in clear and direct ways. This creates a sense of powerlessness. Therefore, they frequently resort to manipulation when trying to get their needs met. Nice guys are controlling. a major priority for nice guys is keeping their world smooth. This creates a constant need to try to control the people and things around them. Nice guys give to get. Though nice guys tend to be generous givers, their giving often has unconscious and unspoken strings attached. They want to be appreciated. They want some kind of reciprocation. They want someone to stop being angry at them, etc. Nice guys often report feeling frustrated or resentful as a result of giving so much while seemingly getting so little in return. Nice guys are passive-aggressive. Nice guys tend to express their frustration and resentment in indirect, roundabout, and not-so-nice ways. This includes being unavailable, forgetting, being late, not following through, not being able to get an erection, climaxing too quickly, and repeating the same annoying behaviors even when they have promised to never do them again. Nice guys are full of rage. Though nice guys frequently deny ever getting angry, a lifetime of frustration and resentment creates a pressure cooker of repressed rage deep inside these men. This rage tends to erupt at some of the most unexpected and seemingly inappropriate times. Nice guys are addictive. Addictive behavior serves the purpose of relieving stress, altering moods, or medicating pain. Since nice guys tend to keep so much bottled up inside, it has to come out somewhere. One of the most common addictive behaviors for nice guys is sexual compulsiveness. Nice guys have difficulty setting boundaries. Many nice guys have a hard time saying no, stop, or I'm not going to. They often feel like helpless victims and see the other person as the cause of the problems they are experiencing. Nice guys are frequently isolated. Though nice guys desire to be liked and loved, their behaviors actually make it difficult for people to get very close to them. Nice guys are often attracted to people and situations that need fixing. This behavior is often the result of the nice guy's childhood conditioning, his need to look good, or his quest for approval. Unfortunately, this tendency pretty much guarantees that nice guys will spend most of their time putting out fires and managing crises. Nice guys frequently have problems in intimate relationships. Though nice guys often put tremendous emphasis on this part of their lives, their intimate relationships are frequently a source of struggle and frustration. For example, nice guys are often terrible listeners because they are too busy trying to figure out how to defend themselves or fix the other person's problem. Because of their fear of conflict, nice guys are frequently dishonest and are rarely available to work all the way through a problem. It is not unusual for nice guys to form relationships with partners whom they believe to be projects or diamonds in the rough. When these projects don't polish up as expected, nice guys tend to blame their partner for standing in the way of their happiness. Nice guys have issues with sexuality. Though most nice guys deny having problems with sex, I have yet to meet one who isn't either dissatisfied with his sex life, has a sexual dysfunction, can't get or maintain an erection, climaxes too quickly, or has sexually acted out through affairs, prostitution, pornography, compulsive masturbation, etc. Nice guys are usually only relatively successful. The majority of nice guys I've met have been talented, intelligent, and moderately successful. Almost without exception, though, they fail to live up to their full potential. But he seemed like such a nice guy. It is not unusual for unsuspecting people to mistake the passive, pleasing, and generous characteristics of a nice guy for those of a healthy male. To many women, the nice guy initially appears to be a real catch, because the nice guy is different from other men they've been with. Unfortunately, the negative traits listed above find a way to ooze out into the nice guy's lives and personal relationships. As a result, these men tend to swing back and forth between being nice and not so nice. I have listened to countless wives, partners, and girlfriends describe the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde quality of nice guys. He can be really wonderful, and he can also hurt me deeply. He'll do all the extra little things like picking up the kids and fixing dinner when I have to put in extra hours at work, but then, out of the blue, he'll throw a tantrum about me never being sexually available to him. Everyone thinks he is such a great guy, and I'm really lucky to have him, but they don't know what he can really be like. He's always helping people out with their car or something else that needs fixing. When I ask him to do something, he tells me that he can never make me happy and that I'm nagging and controlling like his mother. He is constantly trying to please me. He will do anything for me except really be there for me. He'll go shopping with me even though I know he doesn't want to. The whole time he will just sulk, which makes me miserable. I wish he would just tell me no sometimes. He will never tell me when something is bothering him. He'll just keep it in, and it will build like a pressure cooker. I won't have a clue that anything is bothering him. And then, out of the blue, he'll explode, and we'll end up having a big fight. If he would just tell me when he is upset about something, it would make it a lot easier. When I try to talk to him about something that is bothering me, he tries to fix it. He thinks that if I just did everything his way, it would solve all of my problems. He always tells me that I dwell on the negative and that he can never make me happy. All I really want is for him to listen to me. After all the other crummy men I've been with, I thought I'd finally found a nice guy that I could trust. 5 years into our marriage, I found out that he was addicted to pornography and peep shows. I was devastated. I never had a clue. I wish I could wave a magic wand, keep all of his good traits, and make all of the others disappear. The Integrated Male. After enrolling in a No More Mr. Nice Guy therapy group, Gil, a pleasant man in his early 50s, revealed that his wife was supportive of his joining a group. Nevertheless, he harbored a secret fear that she would be angry at what the name of the group seemed to imply: how to stop being a nice guy and become an SOB. Using typical nice guy logic, Gil questioned why any woman would be supportive of men becoming not nice. Nice guys tend to be very black and white in their thinking. The only alternative they can see to being nice is becoming bastards or jerks. I frequently remind nice guys that the opposite of crazy is still crazy, so becoming a jerk isn't the answer. Recovery from the nice guy syndrome isn't about going from one extreme to another. The process of breaking free from ineffective nice guy patterns doesn't involve becoming not nice. Rather, it means becoming integrated. Being integrated means being able to accept all aspects of oneself. An integrated man is able to embrace everything that makes him unique: his power, his assertiveness, his courage, and his passion, as well as his imperfections, his mistakes, and his dark side. An integrated male possesses many of the following attributes. He has a strong sense of self. He likes himself just as he is. He takes responsibility for getting his own needs met. He is comfortable with his masculinity and his sexuality. He has integrity. He does what is right, not what is expedient. He is a leader. He is willing to provide for and protect those he cares about. He is clear, direct, and expressive of his feelings. He can be nurturing and giving without caretaking or problem-solving. He knows how to set boundaries and is not afraid to work through conflict. An integrated male doesn't strive to be perfect or gain the approval of others. Instead, he accepts himself just as he is, warts and all. An integrated male accepts that he is perfectly imperfect. Making the transformation from a nice guy to an integrated male doesn't come about just by trying harder to be a good man. Breaking free from the nice guy syndrome demands embracing a totally different way of viewing oneself and the world, and a complete change in one's personal paradigm. Let me explain. Paradigms. A paradigm is the roadmap we use to navigate life's journey. Everyone uses these roadmaps, and everyone assumes the map they are using is up to date and accurate. Paradigms often operate at an unconscious level, yet they determine to a large degree our attitudes and behaviors. They serve as a filter through which we process life experiences. Data that does not fit our paradigm is screened out and never reaches our conscious mind. Information that does fit our paradigm is magnified by the process, adding even greater support for that particular way of believing. Paradigms, like roadmaps, can be great tools for speeding us along our journey. Unfortunately, if they are outdated or inaccurate, they can send us in the wrong direction or fruitlessly driving around the same old neighborhood. When this happens, we often keep trying harder to find our desired destination while feeling more and more frustrated. Even though an individual following an inaccurate or outdated paradigm may think that his behavior makes perfect sense, those around him may wonder what he could possibly be thinking to make him act the way he does. Most paradigms are developed when we were young, naive, and relatively powerless. They are often based on inaccurate interpretations of childhood experiences. Since they are often unconscious, they are rarely evaluated or updated. Unfortunately, these paradigms are assumed to be 100% accurate, even when they are not. The ineffective nice guy paradigm. The working paradigm of the nice guy is this. If I can hide my flaws and become what I think others want me to be, then I will be loved, get my needs met, and have a problem-free life. Even when this paradigm is ineffective, nice guys only see one alternative: try harder. Nice guys are notoriously slow learners and amazingly quick forgetters when their paradigms are challenged. Their inclination is to hang on to belief systems that have proven to be consistently unworkable, yet are so embedded in their unconscious mind that to challenge them is tantamount to heresy. It is difficult for nice guys to consider doing something different, even when what they are doing isn't working. Jason, whose sexual difficulties with his wife Heather were introduced at the beginning of this chapter, is a good example of the frustration that can result from an ineffective nice guy paradigm. Jason had a controlling, perfectionistic father who put unrealistic demands on Jason and his siblings. His father believed that there was one right way to do everything, his way. Jason's mother was an emotionally dependent woman who lived through her children. When his mother was needy, she would smother her kids. When the children had needs, she was often too emotionally distressed to respond. Jason learned to cope with his childhood experience by developing a paradigm that included believing that if he could figure out how to do everything right, he could garner his father's approval and avoid his criticism, believing that if he responded to his mother's neediness by being attentive and nurturing, she would be available to him when he had needs, believing if he was never a moment's problem, he would get love and approval, believing that if he hid his mistakes, no one would ever get mad at him. As a child, Jason was too naive and powerless to realize that no matter what he did, he would never live up to his father's expectations. Similarly, no matter how giving he was, his needy mother would never be available to nurture him. He could not see that there really was no way to do everything right. And regardless of how well he hid his flaws or mistakes, people might still get angry at him. Even when his childhood roadmap failed to take him in the desired direction, the only option he could see was to just keep trying harder, doing more of the same. The only thing his paradigm ever really did was to create a distraction from his feelings of fear, worthlessness, and inadequacy. In adulthood, Jason tried to apply his childhood paradigm to his relationship with his wife. Like his mother, his wife was only attentive when she was emotionally needy. Like his father, she could be critical and controlling. by applying his childhood roadmap to his marriage, trying to do everything right, being attentive and nurturing, never being a moment's problem, hiding his mistakes. Jason created an illusion that he could get his wife to approve of him all the time, be sexually available whenever he wanted, and never get mad at him. His defective paradigm prevented him from seeing that no matter what he did, his wife would still at times be cold, critical, and unavailable, and that maybe he needed her to be that way. Even when his paradigm was just as ineffective in adulthood as it was in childhood, Jason's only option seemed to be to just keep trying harder. Doing something different. One of my all-time favorite Seinfeld episodes is the one where George decided to change his life by acting the opposite of how he would have typically behaved. Ironically, by doing everything the opposite, he gets a beautiful girlfriend and a job with the Yankees. While doing everything the opposite may not be the answer for breaking free from the nice guy syndrome, doing some things different is. Over the last several years, I have watched countless men do something different by applying the principles contained in this book. These men have transformed themselves from resentful, frustrated, helpless nice guys into assertive, empowered, and happy individuals. Just like George on The Seinfeld Show, when nice guys decide to make a change, interesting things begin to happen. Among other things, I've watched these men accept themselves just as they are, use their mistakes as valuable learning tools, stop seeking the approval of others, experience loving and intimate relationships, make their needs a priority, find people who are able and willing to help them meet their needs, learn to give judiciously and with no strings attached, face their fears, develop integrity and honesty, set boundaries, build meaningful relationships with men, create healthier, more satisfying relationships with women, experience and express their feelings, deal with problems directly, develop an intimate and satisfying sexual relationship, find peace with the changing complexities of life. Asking for help. Nice guys believe they should be able to do everything on their own. They have a difficult time asking for help and try to hide any signs of imperfection or weakness. Breaking free from the nice guy syndrome involves reversing this pattern. Recovery from the nice guy syndrome is dependent on revealing oneself and receiving support from safe people. It is essential, therefore, that men who want to break free from the nice guy syndrome find safe people to assist them in this process. I encourage recovering nice guys to begin this process with a therapist, therapy group, 12-step group, a religious leader, or close friend. Since nice guys tend to seek out the approval of women, I strongly encourage them to begin this process with men. For some nice guys, the concept of safe men may seem like an oxymoron, but I highly recommend it anyway. I've been leading men's therapy groups for recovering nice guys for several years. Some of the most significant aspects of my own recovery from the nice guy syndrome, even before I knew what it was, occurred in the context of 12-step groups and therapy groups. Even though I'm sure it is possible to break free from the nice guy syndrome without the help of a group, it is the most effective tool I know for facilitating the recovery process. Breaking free activities. If you recognize yourself or someone you love in what you have read so far, read on. This book presents a practical and effective guide for breaking free from the negative effects of the nice guy syndrome. This program has worked for countless men, and it can work for you or a loved one. To help facilitate this process, I present numerous breaking free activities throughout the book. These breaking free activities serve to facilitate the paradigm shift that is necessary for recovery from the nice guy syndrome. They will not only help recovering nice guys understand where their paradigms came from, but will help replace them with more accurate and up-to-date ones. These assignments will also point recovering nice guys in a direction that will help them start doing things differently. Caution. Before you decide to apply the principles presented in this book, I must first warn you about two things. The first is that the program of recovery presented in No More Mr. Nice Guy is not just a few good ideas to try on for size. It represents a challenge to everything nice guys believe about what they must do to be loved, get their needs met, and keep their world calm. Breaking free from the nice guy syndrome involves a radical change in perspective and behavior. Trying to do it halfway will only result in needless suffering. Second, breaking free from the nice guy syndrome will significantly affect your personal relationships. If you are currently in a relationship, I encourage you to ask your partner to read this book along with you. The program of recovery presented in No More Mr. Nice Guy will significantly affect you, as well as those closest to you. Though your partner may be supportive of you making positive changes, they may also initially frighten him or her. Reading this book together can help facilitate this transition. With these warnings aside, if what you have read so far makes sense, keep reading. The following chapters contain information that can help you break free from the nice guy syndrome and start getting what you want in love and life. Breaking free, activity number one. Write down three possible safe people or groups that might be able to provide support for you in your recovery from the nice guy syndrome. If no one comes to mind, get out the telephone directory and look up counselors or support groups in the phone book. Write down three names and phone numbers and call them when you finish this chapter. If you are employed by a company with an employee assistance program, this is another resource. If you know someone who has been to therapy or a support group, ask them for information. If you have access to the internet, you can search for 12-step groups or support groups. Breaking free, activity number two. Why would it seem rational for a person to try to eliminate or hide certain things about himself and try to become something different unless there was a compelling reason for him to do so? Why do people try to change who they really are? Take some time and think about this. Is this your behavior or the behavior of someone you know? Chapter 2. The Making of a Nice Guy. I concluded the previous chapter with the questions. Why would it seem rational for a person to try to eliminate or hide certain things about himself and try to become something different unless there was a compelling reason for him to do so? Why do people try to change who they really are? After spending years examining the nice guy syndrome from every possible angle, there's only one answer to this question that makes sense. Because it does not feel safe or acceptable.